Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
It is a new Friday here on The Takeaway, but it is a new day in America. Good morning, everyone. A new poll released this week by the Pew Research Center shows that in the past 5 decades, racial intermarriage has gone from an extreme fringe of American society to approaching the mainstream. In 2010, according to the study, 15% of new marriages crossed racial or ethnic lines. That's twice the rate from 1980. And a great majority of Americans say they would readily accept an interracial marriage in their own family. Joining us to talk about the history of interracial marriage in the U.S. and the significance behind our growing acceptance of the practice is Renee Romano, professor of history and African-American studies at Oberlin College, author of Race Mixing, Black-White Marriage in Postwar America. Welcome to the program, professor.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
So, Renee, this is quite a history. Remind us of the, ups and downs here, and, mostly downs if you look at, through American history.
Indeed. When you think about it, the taboo and the legal regulation of interracial marriage is one of the most long-standing tenets of American history. At some point, interracial relationships were illegal in 42 of the states. Now, that changed over time, and it shifted. But this regulating and preventing interracial relationships was absolutely central to early American history and up through, in many places, the 1960s. You could be arrested if you performed an interracial marriage. In some places, you could be arrested, so they would fine or arrest ministers who agreed to perform an interracial marriage.
No, and that sense of arrest and regulation is well within our historical memory. Listen to this. This is the voice of Mildred and Richard Loving from a documentary called The Loving Story, which I'll give you some more details about in a moment. But listen to this.
It was about 2 a.m. And I saw this light, you know, and I woke up and it was the policeman standing beside the bed. And he told us to get up. That we was under arrest.
They came one night and they knocked a couple times. I heard them, and before I could get up, you know, they just broke the door and came right on in.
That's Mildred and Richard Loving remembering a charge, an arrest for miscegenation in 1958. Their interracial marriage was illegal in Virginia. That's not an unusual story in American history, right, Renee Romano?
Absolutely not. At the time that they were arrested, interracial marriage was illegal in 21 states. But when the Supreme Court finally declared that these laws couldn't be enforced anymore, it was still illegal in 16 states. It was not at all unusual. They were forced to leave. They were banished from the South. And at the time when the judge ruled that they could either go to prison or they could leave the South for 25 years, they could leave Virginia, their families behind, he said it was, he essentially said, God created the races as separate beings, and it is not his law for them to mix.
The power of love, eh?
Yeah. They were aptly named. And this was when this was a couple that they were young who experienced this. She would be a Mildred Jeter when she married. She was still a teenager. They had grown up together. For them, it was no big deal as they saw it. They had known each other all their lives. But for the state, this was incredibly threatening as they saw it to upholding the racial status quo and to ensuring that whites remained in the, you know, as the dominant group. And that's what these laws were about.
I like what you said there, that from their perspective, the couple's perspective, the Loving's perspective, this was just no big deal because they'd grown up together. Is that the much broader experience among people today, the generation today, that are marrying across racial lines at a much higher rate?
Oh, I think so. And when you look at poll numbers of young people, they simply say, this is something we accept. We think we will likely date someone across race lines. That's just normal. They see each other in schools. And that was always the biggest indicator of who might get married, was being able to meet somebody in a, at a place where you could be relative social equals. So interracial couples met at schools once they, if they could meet at schools. They could meet at workplaces where there wasn't one as the boss and one as the, below, but, a maid and a porter at a hotel, for example, in the 1920s or 30s. So being able to meet and date like any other couple might is really vital. And for much of American history, that's been really hard to meet people across race lines in a situation where you could even be able to imagine dating them.
Well, for a historian, this must feel a bit like a whirlwind in the sense that there is such rapid change going on. Let me ask you a cultural history question, if you don't mind. It seems to me that this Pew study suggests not only are those are we so far from that miscegenation notion in American history, but we've also moved a significant piece away from, remember that movie in 1991, Jungle Fever by Spike Lee?
I do indeed, yes.
That's obsolete. That feels obsolete today.
Well, that is interesting. Spike Lee, that movie Jungle Fever was really about the two things. It was about the idea that you might date across race lines because you were interested in sort of an exotic experience and you were driven by curiosity. But it was also about the anger that of African-American women at African-American men who were going and dating, especially talented, educated African-American men who were going and dating out.
Right.
And that's not completely gone. There was a new book recently that got a lot of press attention on Is Marriage for White People, that looked at declining rates of marriage among African Americans and made the case that many African American women are still angry. And if you look at the numbers in the Pew Research poll, it's the difference between the number of black men who marry whites and or marry out and number of black women who marry out is pretty stark, 26% to about 9% in new marriages.
Interesting.
And so some of that Jungle Fever, the anger that that movie tapped into, I think it is abated somewhat, but that's not – some of those issues are still around,
sure.
Though there's much wider acceptance of interracial relationships than there had been before.
And there's still suspicion of interracial relationships for very, very traditional reasons in America, but it's interesting how this Pew study suggests that all of these kinds of issues are in play here. Mm-hmm. It's really a moving target in America right now.
The thing that struck me most of looking at this study was there was a finding that about 45% of Americans think it's actually a positive good when people marry across race lines. They think that's a good thing. That is just incredibly different. In 1960, when the Gallup poll did a poll on this, you couldn't find – it was 1% of white Americans
right.
who thought interracial marriage was acceptable. It was nearly unanimous consensus. And black Americans, although – and this was the only people who were polled. So we don't have the views of other groups in these earlier years. Black Americans who began to be polled in the 1970s or so were more supportive of the right to marry, but didn't necessarily think it was a positive thing. This is really extraordinary.
A sociological 180, if you can call it that. Rene
Absolutely.
Romano, professor of history and African-American studies at Oberlin College and author of Race Mixing, Black-White Marriage in Post-War America, about this upward trend for interracial marriage. Rene, thanks so much.
You're welcome.